This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
With Jake and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
All right. First down here to you, Jake. Is moving Daryl Taylor to strong side linebacker, just like the Seahawks did with Bruce Irvin, is that the right move for the Seahawks?
It really is based and determined off of what you feel like you have in your pass rushing depth. I think Daryl Taylor is best suited to be a Leo, to be a designated edge rusher for your defense in the spot that where Carlos Dunlap is going to be. Benson Mayoa has played. Alton Robinson has also found a way to get himself on the field in that role. But I really truly feel that Daryl Taylor right now, I think the best move could be for him to play that Sam linebacker position. He came from a 3-4 defensive scheme at Tennessee. He is used to dropping in coverage. He is used to playing that dual role. And I think that you can find a variety of different ways to get Daryl Taylor on the field as a Sam linebacker in base personnel situations, and then also when it comes to pass rushing downs and distances and situations, you can get Daryl Taylor on the field as well, much like what they did with Bruce Irvin. So I do think that probably would be the right move for the Seahawks, given what they have on their current roster right now.
Second down. Stacy.
DJ, hi.
Hi. The NFL announced its off-season workout dates this morning. What do we need to know about the Seahawks?
All right, Four Down Territory, by the way, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Now get out your pen, pencil, your phone, whatever, your calendar, and jot these dates down. So rookie minicamp is going to be the first date hitting your calendar. That starts on May 14th. For the Seattle Seahawks. So May 14th, May 15th, May 16th. It's going to be the first chance for coaches to get a look at rookies all together on the field. Rookie minicamp is also going to include guys that are those unrestricted guys. So it's obviously not just the three guys coming in from the draft. You're going to have a couple guys, tryouts, undrafted rookies, etc., coming in there. Starts on May 14th, not too long now. Then you have OTA off-season workouts. That starts May 24th. It goes May 24th, May 26th and 7th, and then June 1st and June 3rd and 4th. Finally, you have mandatory minicamp. Again, mandatory. This is when you're going to have the full team there, and that is on June 15th, 16th, and 17th. So on those dates, stay tuned for updates from coaches, from reporters. You'll probably get some press conferences in there. So news coming your way as soon as May 14th.
Third down. Jake, Richard Sherman joined First Take yesterday and said that the Green Bay Packers have disrespected Aaron Rodgers for years now. Do you agree with that statement?
No, I don't agree with it at all. I don't know what Richard Sherman is referring to. I mean, you look at the Packers drafting Jordan Love last year. Okay, that could be shown as a sign of disrespect. But before that, prior to that, I don't think so. I mean, they listened to Aaron Rodgers when it came to the firing of Mike McCarthy, who was a very successful head coach in Green Bay Packer history. Helped get them to a Super Bowl. They were a winning team in Green Bay, getting to the playoffs and yet getting stuck in a rut. And Aaron Rodgers essentially got him fired. They listened to him. They surrounded him over the course of his career with great offensive line play. They've had great talent around him over the course of his career. So, no, I completely disagree with Richard Sherman in terms of how the Packers have disrespected him. I would love to know in what way Sherman thinks that Rodgers has been disrespected, not just in the past year, but Sherman said for years. And that's one that I can't get on board with. And as you see today and over the past couple days, there have been former teammates that have been out and about doing interviews, speaking on behalf of Aaron Rodgers, what he wants, what he actually wants. And now you see there seems to be this walking back of Aaron Rodgers' strong sentiments and comments about how he wants out of Green Bay and he wants a trade. He wants the GM fired. I think that you're going to see Aaron Rodgers in a Green Bay Packer uniform this season.
Fourth down. Jake, of course, the Seahawks have hired new offensive coordinator Shane Waldron. A lot of excitement around that move, but no offense as explosive as it can be is perfect. What challenge will the Seahawks offense have this season?
Well, the biggest challenge in what we saw in the second half of the season is that defensive football got a lot harder. The opponents got a lot harder, and you faced a lot of opponents that were in the top five, you know, the 49ers, the Washington football team, the Rams being the number one defense. Well, guess what? That challenge comes up again this year. You look at their schedule, Stacey, get this, 10 teams on their schedule, and yes, I'm counting their division opponents twice, so 10 of their games will be against teams that have top 15 defenses last season. Yikes. And only look to continue to keep getting better. You go down the list, the Rams, they'll play twice. Washington had a great defense. They'll have a great defense again. They have to play the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I'm just going down the list right now. Rams number one, Washington two, Steelers three, New Orleans Saints four. There'll be another team. San Francisco, five. So the top five teams in total defense last year are on your schedule. Then you go around. You go to the Green Bay Packers, the Chicago Bears, the Arizona Cardinals. So you're looking at a very difficult schedule when it comes to offensively for you Seahawks-wise. You're going to go up against really good defense. You're going to go against quality defenses. And can you perform much better, more consistently against those groups and not let the defense dictate the way that you play and the way that you attack? That's going to be the biggest challenge for this offense this season.
Don't forget, you can stream your favorite 710 ESPN Seattle shows at home through your smart speaker. And if you don't have one, we have a surprise for you. Head to 710sports.com/win right now, where you can enter to win one. It's one a day for the month of May. All month, we are giving you 31 chances to win a 710 ESPN Seattle logoed smart speaker. So head to 710sports.com/win to learn how. Before we get to Jim Nagy coming your way in about 5 minutes, Jake, there was a couple questions coming in on the Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710, if you guys want to keep those coming. Normally, I would save these for What I Need to Know, which is how we close out the Jake and Stacey show every single day. We have fun questions. We also have questions about the Seahawks, about the Mariners, about sound, whatever it is, questions that you guys have that you want to make part of the discussion, and we kind of turn the show over to you guys for about 10 minutes there. So normally I would save this, but I was so close to making it my second down that I want to just include it here and kind of hear what you have to say about it. So we were talking about John Schneider wanting to get in guys into the program, particularly on defense, particularly in that secondary, that would come in with the kind of mentality where they're going to compete right away for a starting job. They're going to come in and it's, no one is in my way. I am here to prove that I can be your guy, right? And they hadn't had that for so long because they were drafting guys that were coming in, and those guys were coming in looking at guys that they had been playing in Madden, at Richard Sherman, at Earl Thomas, at Cam Chancellor, and why would I think I could beat out those guys?
Established starters. Players in the league.
That's exactly right. And so someone texted in when I said both cornerback spots were open, very fair question, and said, well, wait a minute, you're telling me DJ Reed isn't a starter? And Jake, the way I'm looking at it, tell me if this is the way you're looking at it, is there are few names, a handful of guys that you can ink their name in on the roster. No one's taking Bobby Wagner's job. No one's taking Russell Wilson's job. No one's taking Dwayne Brown's job. No one's taking Chris Carson's job. But there are other spots where if I have to make my roster right now with who's going to be your opening day starters or your week one starters, yeah, DJ Reed probably going to be that outside guy. But that is a wide open competition to me.
It is. It's wide open. And I don't think that you can pen his name in yet. You could pencil it, but you might have to take that eraser and erase the name. I mean, I think that's what they've been able to create. And DJ Reed, to me, is the type of guy, the type of personality that I think rises to the occasion in these situations. And what they've created at the cornerback spot, I think, is good quality competition. And you want guys like DJ Reed to continue to battle and earn their spot. You want them to feel like they earned it, that they came out and they were the best guy. Guys like Akilah Witherspoon coming out and earning it. Trey Brown, same thing. You could go down the list. But I think that when you look at DJ Reed and what he did, 8 starts, he played in 10 games for you coming off of injury. He had a great year, no doubt about it, and did a great job of being able to get his hands on the football, had 2 interceptions, and was a big factor for you, not only on the field with a physical presence, but also from a mentality standpoint. He matched the level of energy the level of expectation, the level of accountability that you want to have on defense. So he's a guy that I desperately want to see step up, rise to the occasion. I was a big fan of his play last year, but certainly he's going to have to go earn it. And Stacey, to that point, that's what you want. You want, in this always compete philosophy that Pete Carroll and John Schneider have, you have to create competition. You have to have that. And they've been able to create it at a position that we all look at on this roster and see and go, I don't know how I'm feeling about that group. This group looks like one of the weaker points on this roster, and these guys are going to have to step up, and there's no doubt about that. And these guys are going to get plenty of opportunities to show what they can do.
All right, so in addition to asking Jim Nagy about the three newest Seahawks that were chosen in the 2021 draft, Jake, we're going to be asking him about some of the undrafted rookies that they've since reportedly signed. Is there any one guy you are most curious to ask Jim about?
All of them.
I want to pick one, Jake.
I have to give his take. I have to get his take on all of them.
And we will.
The one that I'm really curious about is going to be Tomorris and Terry. How impactful can this guy be? I think that Tomorris and Terry has the potential, Stacey, to be a guy that comes onto the scene and really surprises everybody. If he can be the player that was of the 2019 version of himself, he's one of the more dynamic receivers in this entire draft. He would be a good pickup, Stacey. I mean, he's a guy that if he would have replicated somewhat of the production that he had in 2019 and 2020, he's drafted in the first two rounds of this draft, Stacey. So that's somebody that I think, you know, I would love to hear more insight from Jim Nagy on, and maybe a couple defensive players, because I think the offensive players have gotten a little bit more of the highlight in the run. But is there anybody defensively that he really, really likes in this undrafted market?
Now, how about that kid from Sumner High School, ended up going to Stanford?
Connor Weddington.
What do we need to know about him?
Well, first
as
off,
a local kid, I think people are going to be intrigued.
Local kid, and I know him personally. He really, really good. Really, really good kid. Also an extremely, extremely hard worker. Very versatile. A guy who's played running back. He played running back the majority of his high school career. Switched to receiver and kick returner at the collegiate level. Was also being looked at as a corner, Stacey, coming out of high school as well. But the other big factor and something that is very noteworthy is the Seahawks gave him a $20,000 signing bonus coming out of college. They don't
Which
do that.
Which is no small sum.
No, it's not for an undrafted priority free agent. And, and in the past, guys like that, they have given every opportunity those guys to make the roster, and typically they do. So I'll be very curious to see where Jim Nagy thinks that he can come in and fit.
I think the reason I'm most curious about those wide receivers is because I feel like, speaking of wide open battles, that's the spots essentially three through, I don't know, let's say six or whatever, behind Metcalf, behind Lockett, feel open. And not only that, but it is so important to fill that gap. Behind Metcalf and Lockett, each of whom had obviously over 1,000 receiving yards, the next closest receiver still on the roster was Freddie Swain, who had, I think, like 150-something or 160-something. That's a big gap. I'm not saying Freddie Swain can't take a big step forward this year. This isn't a knock on Swain at all. All I'm saying is, if you want your offense to be a huge strength, you need to add some weapons in there.
You need
more weapons.
And that's a place of competition, Stacey, you talk about. And one of the other things that I love is that you're looking at that receiver position. You talk about, you know, DK, you talk about Tyler, you talk about Eskridge, Freddie Swain in that competition, Tomorris Terry. You're talking about Cade Johnson, who's a very, very good slot receiver coming out of South Dakota State. You look at John Ursua as well, still in the mix. I know everybody's asking about him. But you created good, quality competition for the remaining bottom part of your receiver position. And to a point, Stacey, where I don't think you see a huge dip. I think that you created the competition with good level talent that you might have an embarrassment of riches, much like the Kansas City Chiefs have had over the past couple years.
Well, that's why it was interesting. I loved your post-draft point about no one would be critiquing the Kansas City Chiefs for taking Eskridge so much as they would be critiquing the Seahawks for, like, oh, you need an offensive lineman, why'd you take this receiver? And it's like, because he could make the offense better and more explosive. And you want want at least one side of your ball to be elite. And if you can get that much closer to it with Eskridge, with a receiver that's been comped to a guy like Tyreek Hill, then why wouldn't you take that shot?
Right, and I think that that's a perfect comp for him, to be honest with you. The size in terms of his height, in terms of his build, and his speed and the ability, Stacey, as a track guy, to be able to have the wiggle that he has, the ability to make yards after catch, I think are one of the more impressive aspects about what Eskridge can bring to the table. So when you look at, you know, that aspect as a whole, it's very exciting to see how this group and their playmaking ability can improve drastically, because it's been a very top-heavy group, right? It's been Tyler Lockett, Doug Baldwin, and then there's a drop-off. It's been DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, drop-off.
Please,
and
I won't stand for the Jimmy Graham erasure, Jake.
I will not. That's a tight end position. We're talking about receivers, Stacey.
Okay,
I wouldn't do that to your guy.
Thank you.
Correct. But I think that that part, if you can have and create matchups across the board that are favorable, that your quarterback, Russell Wilson's looking around and loving the matchups that he sees, that's when you really can truly be dynamic. That's when you can be sustainable against, as I mentioned in four down territories, Stacey, 10 of the opponents that you will have this season, in your regular season, are going to be, from a year ago, a top level defense, a top 15 defense, even top 5 defense, and that's going to be a big part of it, is that they didn't have enough dynamic weapons. They didn't have enough matchup or mismatch opportunities across their board.
Follow-up question here. The Seahawks technically used one of their draft picks, one of their 4 draft picks, on an offensive lineman, trading it before the draft, therefore entering the draft with 3 picks, and picking up Gabe Jackson from the Raiders. Do you think it was a mistake not to keep addressing the offensive line in the draft?
Well, you know, obviously they went out and got Stone Forsythe, but I think that when you look at
their first pick, I guess.
Right. I think that there's an argument that you could make in regards to the center position. Now, if you really truly believe in Ethan Posick, as I've said before, Ethan Posick is a guy that really stands out in terms of having the opportunity to get into his second year, right? Get into his second year at the position, to be more comfortable, to be at the position that he was drafted at, right? And if you believe that he can improve, then, and he's better than some of the guys that are coming out in the draft, and you don't think that they're going to make that impact, then okay, you move forward. You believe that as a group, Damian Lewis, Gabe Jackson next to Ethan Posick is going to be an improved look to your offensive line. Then you look at the other areas in which you can improve, and that is receiver 3. So, do we have Jim on the line here? Okay.
All right. Joining us right now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline, it is Jim Nagy, Executive Director of the Senior Bowl, former scout, which makes him an expert on all of these guys you guys are dying to learn more about. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing great, Stacey.
Good. Okay, so I'm going to start with the player I'm personally most excited about, which is Dwayne Eskridge. So first things first, how do you see him fitting into the offense? Was he a good pick by Seattle?
Yeah, I love the pick. I love the fit. I really like the player. I thought D had a chance of going actually early in the second round. Just really explosive, everything. You've probably heard John and Pete and those guys talk about up there. I mean, he's a dynamic player. Loved his mentality, which I'm sure they love. You know, just with my 5 years up there, I kind of lean in the same direction they do when it comes to the makeup of these guys. So, you know, just knowing that D played some on defense, and the only reason they moved him over there and tinkered with him there was because of his mindset. And then just to see him down there running down as a gunner on punt team and blowing people up, and just, you know, the question was, would the speed carry over from Mac tape to down here in Mobile? Because I've said it a million times, like, he looked like he was playing at a different speed in the Mid-American Conference, and then he came down here to Mobile and he's running away from people as well. So, I think he's going to fit in immediately and be a factor for him.
Now, Jim, appreciate you coming on. I know you're running place to place, you know, doing stuff with ESPN, so we appreciate you coming on. What about Trey Brown? He was another guy that was down there at the Senior Bowl with you, and you talk about some of that mental makeup, that personality, that edge – you know, everybody's shocked that they picked Trey Brown because he doesn't fit the normal profile of what they've gone after in the past at corner. But what can you tell us? What insight can you give us about him and why you think he's a great pickup for the Seahawks?
Yeah, Trey was one of our top-rated corners going back to last summer because he's got two things that are really hard to find. He's got a combination of elite speed, being one of the fastest players in this draft, and also finishing skills. He really, really just has a knack for finishing when he's around the ball. So those two things are what we really liked on tape. And, you know, he mostly played outside there. So is he the most... you know, does he fit the Seahawks profile? Not really. But I, even in my last couple of years in Seattle, like 3 or 4 years ago, we were starting to lack those standards a little bit. I know everyone's used to seeing the bigger, taller, longer arm corners, but I think, what really kind of changed that is, Justin Coleman. When we traded for Justin Coleman and played him at nickel and got some really good play out of Justin. Now it's interesting that they plan on keeping him outside, which is where he played mostly. Trey played mostly at Oklahoma. We did rep him inside here at nickel at Senior Bowl, and he played really well. He can cover in there as well. So you've got a versatile guy, and it makes sense. I mean, they need to find a starter up there, and I think they're just going to let him battle it out with who's the guy they signed from Southern Miss last year that I scouted, and I'm totally blanking on his name right now.
The guy from Southern Miss? Now I'm blanking.
Yeah. at the cornerback position?
Yeah, who's the small corner they signed from the 49ers?
Oh, DJ. DJ Reed.
DJ Reed.
Yeah, so they'll probably let him battle it out with Reed. I know they like Witherspoon a bunch, so it was a good pick. I mean, he's feisty, he plays bigger than his size measurables, and he can really run. So, and he can finish. I mean, Coach Carroll always wants guys that can finish when they're around the ball, and Trey can do that.
Jim, why do I feel like a guy could be 10 years into the league and you'd still be like, who's that guy out of Virginia? Who'd be like, Jim, what? My question is, you know, the Seahawks fan base, I think it's a really smart fan base and a fan base that's also keenly aware of just how many stars you can find that are undrafted. We've had some of the biggest names here that have been undrafted, and so fans each and every year are looking at that group of players saying who might be the next Doug Baldwin, who could be the next Curse. So is there any one or two guys from this group of Seahawks undrafted rookies that you have your eye on?
There's like five or six.
Oh, tell me.
No, they do. They really got themselves like a second draft class. They capitalized on the fact of having only three picks, and that helps in their recruiting. And I'll give those guys a lot of credit. John's put together a staff of guys that can really connect with players, and that's what the spring becomes. I mean, Jake knows this. You know that it's the one time of the year where scouts can put on their recruiting hat and really get after it. And those guys do a great job. I mean, every year they find guys. I mean, even like Benson Mayoa is a tryout guy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, out of Idaho years ago. So no, they had some Senior Bowl guys. Cade Johnson from South Dakota State, the receiver. I mean, I would think he's going to make that football team. He had, it didn't make sense. He didn't get drafted. I haven't had time this week to, make my usual calls around the league to figure out why our guys didn't go. I always like to self scout what we do here and to figure out why guys we brought to Mobile didn't get drafted. And, like I really thought Cade was going to go in the fourth round. You know, I thought the biggest stumbling block for teams was going to be the level of competition. And then he came down here to Mobile and had a really, really good week. Showed up at receiver. And then even in the game as a gunner on punt team, he made a couple tackles. So, I think he's going to be a really good fit in terms of what they've had in the past. I mean, there is some, I can see some Doug Baldwin comparisons other than I don't like comparing anyone to Doug the person because he's such a unique guy and how he was wired. Like I'd never make that comparison. But in terms of his skill set on the field, I do see that. I think Brian Mills, the corner from North Carolina Central, is your typical Seahawks guy in terms of being, you know, long and ability to finish and really kind of a guy that might need a year on the practice squad. You know, just he was really a junior college guy, played 1 year at the HBCU level for NC Central, and then obviously didn't have a season this year. So, but might be a cool guy to stash for a year and have something. I think Jared Hocker, the guard from Texas A&M, was a guy that when we made calls around the league, putting the bottom end of our roster together, a lot of teams had Jared in the middle rounds. You know, like I thought he was going to go in the fifth or sixth round. So to me, he was a draftable level player. So there's a guy that can make the football team. Tamorian Terry's a really interesting guy, especially if you go back to 2019 tape. He was not the same guy in 2020, but we're talking about a big, fast, long-bodied guy from Florida State who has shown the ability to make explosive plays, you know, as a sophomore in 2019. So they had a haul. They really had a nice haul. And even B.J. Evans, the running back from FAU, if you go back to what I was posting over the summer, I mean, he was a five-star coming out in a loaded Alabama backfield and found his way to FAU and then was really injured most of his time at FAU. But if he's healthy, that guy's an NFL running back. He's a fun guy to watch. So they really did. They knocked it out of the park, and I'm not saying that just because those are my boys. I'm saying it because they really did a good job.
You know, one guy that I was curious to ask you about, because I'm curious what his fit is. You know, he's got a significant amount of money, you know, coming out as a priority free agent, was Connor Weddington out of Stanford. You know, he got like a $20,000 signing bonus. Where is his fit? Is he a jack of all aces in terms of offensively, running back, slot receiver? Do you see him more of as a slot guy? What's your thought there?
Yeah, he does have nice versatility. And we looked at Connor for the Senior Bowl. So we did a full study on him. He's a versatile guy. I think you can move him around. I think he's more of a slot, but he does have – what we liked about him was his ability with the ball in his hands. So if you wanted to line him up in the backfield and get it to him that way, just a guy you want to be creative with, I think he can fill that role. So that's another guy that I think, you know, figures into the mix. You know, to me, at worst, a practice squad player. But to me, out of the receiver group, to me, Kay Johnson's the guy to keep your eye on.
Okay.
Good stuff from Jim Nagy. Jim, we love talking to you. We could talk to you about these guys for hours, but I'm sure you will hear from us later this summer, especially as we start to actually see some of these guys in OTAs and training camps, and we're going to have more questions. But we'll be keeping our eye on Cade. I like that advice.
Jim, I saw your 2022 board already going. You're sick, man. You got an illness.
You have a sickness.
I love it.
A lot of catching up. I've got a lot of catching up to do. The guys in the office have worked really hard for the last 3 months, and now I got some catch up.
All right. Jim, we love talking to you. Thanks so much for taking the time, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah, have a great summer up there.
All right, see ya.
You too.
He is Jim Nagy, former scout and current executive director of the Senior Bowl. All right, coming your way next, the latest on what Richard Sherman had to say on the Seahawks.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Is Richard Sherman going to be a Seattle Seahawk again? It's the question all of you have been asking, in particular since Pete Carroll's post-draft press conference where he said, yes, the two are in communication, yes, the two have talked about it, and no, the Seahawks will not be closing any doors when it comes to that. Now, Richard Sherman joined First Take yesterday and was asked about a return to Seattle. Here's what he said.
Well, it would be a little different than the good old days. You know, there's two people that aren't here from the Legion of Boom. But, you know, it's always in the cards. I spend my entire offseason in Seattle. That's where I live. That's where my family is. So it's never out of the cards. You know, obviously, Pete and I have had conversations throughout the offseason. It just everything needs to shake out right. They're still figuring things out. I'm still figuring things out. But it's definitely not out of the cards. You know, it's no bad blood there between them and I. And it's a cool opportunity.
No bad blood, Jake. It's not out of the cards. But do you see Richard Sherman actually back in Seattle? I give it a non-0% chance.
You give it a non-zero.
Non-zero.
I give it more than that. I give it a 30% chance. I believe that there's going to be another team out there. Look, the Raiders, they went and signed Casey Hayward, which was a possible landing destination for Richard Sherman. That was one of the places that he talked about. I think that when you look at you look at Richard Sherman overall in some of the other destinations, the Jets, you could look at the 49ers. There's a lot of other teams, Dallas, that still, you know, they still have places where that defensive scheme exists. Dallas probably wouldn't be one just in terms of where their cornerback situation is right now. But I think that there's, to my point, there's a number of different teams out there that I believe would really, really want Richard Sherman's veteran presence. Mm-hmm. And could really use it on their team. Now, do I think that the Seahawks could use that? Yeah, absolutely. I really, really believe that. But when you talk about competition, Stacey, you talk about wanting to create that competition, bringing in somebody like Richard Sherman, would eliminate one of those positions. It really would. I mean, you're not signing Richard Sherman and coming back to this roster to be a backup player, nor is he coming back with that mindset or that idea. He would just retire, right, if he was just going to be a backup role player for the Seattle Seahawks. So I think that's one thing that the Seahawks have to weigh out. How much competition do they want on their roster? Do they want both spots to be extremely competitive because they love the guys that they currently have? Or do they feel like, hey, we feel like we have a major vacancy. We only want to have one competition on one side and have a known commodity on the other, like Sherm. But I think it's very cool that Pete Carroll and Richard Sherman, after these years, you know, 3 years, after a very messy divorce, that they can come back and say, hey, we're on good terms, we're speaking, and for Richard Sherman to say that it could be a cool opportunity to come back to Seattle.
Love their ability to co-parent these Seahawks fans. You love to see it. Join the Seahawks Schedule Challenge, and if you can predict the number of primetime games the Seahawks will play this season, you will be entered into a drawing for a chance to win a $100 gift card to the Seahawks Pro Shop. Schedule's announced on Wednesday, May 12th. You guys, that's right around the corner, so get your guesses in right now at 710sports.com/win. That's 710sports.com/win. We could be seeing Jared Kelnick soon, according to one MLB insider, but are we sure he's the savior for this season's offense? Don't go anywhere. That's coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios,
streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Welcome back into Jake and Stacy. He's Jake Heaps. I'm Stacy Rost. Now, we're going to be talking about a quote from an MLB insider, a report on how soon we could see Jared Kelnick. Before we get to that, first of all, you can tune in on your smart speakers, listen to us on your radio, or you can also watch us, 710sports.com/video. For everyone that keeps asking, no, I am not in my bathroom, this is a wonderful, beautiful floral wallpaper that I have put up in my garage for your guys' viewing purposes for a lovely background here. Jake, secondarily, the thing I want to get to is DJ, mental note, jot this down. We need to create some kind of sound effect for when Jake invents new words or phrases. Look, I don't want to put you on blast, Jake. I don't want to put you on blast.
You don't want to, but you're going to.
DJ, do you have the cut?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Here
okay.
It is right
this
here.
This was Jake asking Jim Nagy, who joined us 20 minutes ago, a question about a very versatile player.
Connor Weddington out of Stanford, you know, he got like a $20,000 signing bonus. Where is his fit? Is he a jack of all aces in terms of offensively running back, slot receiver? Do you see him more of as a slot guy?
What is that? Jack of all aces. Is he a jack of all aces, guys?
Jack of all trades. Come on. I know that.
No, Jake, now, I think you need to stay true to your brand, and you just need to make look, you guys know what I'm saying, right?
You do. You know what I'm saying. And
jack
we
of
all
aces.
We all get the point, okay? First off, and second of all, you know how like receivers, they're graded on catch rate and catch percentage. My phrase percentage,
it's low.
I think it's got to be an all-time low.
Like it is, you're a guy with like explosive power, horrible catch rate, you know what I mean?
Where it's like an, but you know what, it's like an out-of-body experience, because when I say it like jack of all aces, I know that was wrong in the moment. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, I can't believe I just said that. But you got to keep rolling. You got to keep going with it, Stacey. I can't correct myself mid-sentence to Jim Nagy. God. Are you kidding me? You just got to go with it.
Okay, Jake. Okay. Me and Howdy are making t-shirts.
As my coaches always used to say, if you're going to mess up with 100% effort.
That's true.
And
confidence.
With.
That's true.
Correct. And that's what I try to bring to the table.
All right. Jumping into our Jared Kelnick conversation, John Morosi, just 4 hours ago, earlier this morning, tweeted, Mariners star prospect Jared Kelnick is likely to make his MLB debut later this month, as I said on MLB Network a few moments ago. Seattle's left fielders have combined to hit .204 this season. Soon, the Mariners outfield could be Kelnick, Lewis, and Haniger. So Jerry DePoto was then on with Danny and Gallant and said that the Mariners are getting closer to Kelnick's debut but don't have a set date yet.
We're getting closer and closer. It's some part because we feel like he is making progress. It's some part because it's
time to take a look at him, and that's coming sooner than later. It's also some part in that it might add a spark to our offense if we give him that opportunity. But we're not ready to go there yet. We want to see him start the season in AAA. That begins for him in Tacoma tomorrow night against a really tough opponent. You know, and we'll take it day by day. We've not fixed a date where we're going to tap into Jared and give him that opportunity, but we are getting closer and closer.
Now, I would love to know. Look, he's been in the minor league games down there in Arizona. The AAA season finally begins, tomorrow, and we'll see how that goes. But I think that when you look at Jared Kelnick and the idea that this lineup is struggling, therefore we need to bring up Jared Kelnick, I think that that's a recipe for disaster, although I would love to see it happen, although I'm curious to see if he comes up at the end of May, what exactly the development was, rather than saying, hey, he didn't get a full spring training, and we want to give him that opportunity. I think that that part of it to me is going to be somewhat of a head-scratcher, because I don't understand quite how much better, how much more improved you can get in a month of baseball,
yeah.
or less than that, essentially, for Jared Kelnick, but to make that, step to the big league level. But I think that when you're looking at Jared Kelnick, the thing that concerned me about what Jerry DePoto said was, I loved everything that he said up until, and he could potentially be a spark for the lineup. And I know Salk said, well, maybe DePoto is speaking to the fans here, but I think when you use that phrasing, I'm always going to be cautious about that particular scenario. I'm all in. Once you've made this decision to say that you're going to develop Jared Kelnick and he's going to be in that position, develop him. Make sure that he is fully ready and he is fully ready to go, and that when he comes up, Stacey, that there isn't the pressure and the weight of the world on his shoulders.
Yeah.
That he has to be successful right out of the gate in order to make this team successful. It needs to be in an environment where he feels comfortable, that he can develop, that he can go through the highs and the lows, and that he isn't the quote-unquote spark to get this, anemic batting lineup going again.
Now, devil's advocate here, tell me what you think about this. John Morosi was on with Wyman and Bob yesterday. It was a great interview, and he said, in any normal circumstance, if you had an offense that was floundering, you wouldn't want to bring up your top prospect, because if he doesn't succeed, if he doesn't save them, you have then people that are down on your top prospect, and you could be messing with his confidence. You could be messing with his own development. And so normally that is something you would not do. But Morosi said, you got to kind of think of the context of where the Mariners are. Yes, the offense is struggling, but he expects some guys to get better. He thinks that there is the division and even the AL as a whole a little more up for grabs. And thirdly, that no one really had high expectations for the Mariners. So even if the offense is bad, it's not the end of the world to him to bring up Kelnick right now, or rather to have him debut when the offense is doing poorly, because no one is thinking that he will save them, because no one expects them to go to the postseason.
Well, I would disagree with that. I think that no one's expecting them to go to the postseason, and you're not maybe expecting them to save them from being 500 team to going to the going to playoff contenders. But I do think that the expectation is that you are competitive, even through this developmental process, that you are competitive, that you see guys taking the right steps, that developmentally in this process in year three, that you don't see guys going through tremendous slumps and they're struggling as bad as, let's say, Evan White. You want to see him turn the corner, and you want to see him start to develop and improve and inching towards a developed, rounded out hitter at the plate. You start to see what he's going to be really emerge in a positive way. And I think that's where we're at in this rebuilding process. So if you see guys like Kyle Lewis take a step back, J.P. Crawford, Evan White, continue to see those guys take a step back, it is concerning in this process. So I don't think that it's just like, oh, well, it's development, whatever happens, it's a learning experience. There are expectations to, their performance and how they're growing and how they're able to go through some of these valleys and eventually come back out on top to get themselves on the right track here.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. He's Jake Heaps. I'm Stacey Rost. Now, we will be getting back to our conversation about the Mariners offense, how they can turn this around, coming up at 1:30. Before that, though, we want you guys to get to know one of the newest Seahawks offensive tackle, rookie offensive tackle, Stone.
Stacey, See, you created a monster here.
What are you talking about?
This text line is just filled with people just trolling me with bad phrases. Don't worry, Jake. It's all water over the bridge. Yeah, thanks. I got it. First of all, I don't understand where the lie is there. But thanks a lot, Stacey.
You're welcome. I do what I can, Jake. Look, it's our job as your friend, me and the listeners, to just kind of bring you back down to earth a little. You know what I mean? Just to keep you humble. Like, we're here for you. We're here to support you.
You're right. My head is so big it can't fit through the door. You're right.
You being the jack of all aces that you are, you're so good at so many things that we just got to make sure that there's at least one thing that we remind you. It's going to use a little bit of work. I like it, though. I like it. It's great.
I appreciate
Never change.
It. Thank you.
Never change, Jake.
I won't.
All right.
I won't.
New Seahawks offensive tackle Stone Forsythe joins us next. Do not go anywhere.